The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
So in the context of the match, I mean, on the run,
sliding,
open stance, sliding, and then flying.
And I understand that not being vaccinated today, I'm unable to travel to most of the tournaments at the moment.
And that's the price you're willing to pay?
That is the price that I'm willing to pay.
Ultimately, are you prepared to forego the chance to be the greatest player that ever picked up a racket, statistically, because you feel so strongly about this jab?
Yes.
Why, Novak? Why? Why?
Because the principles of decision-making on my body are more important than any title.
Wow, how about that? We need more people in the world like that, a man of principle, someone who's willing to just give up everything because he doesn't want to take a toxin, a poison, into his body. Everyone else, and the announcer, he can't believe it. No, why? Why, Novak? Why? When everyone else is just supposed to go along. You don't see too many individuals like this in the world today. He made it through to Wimbledon. At least he got into England. And what a spectacular match he had just yesterday. Hopefully he goes all the way. I was telling Sam before the show, typically I don't pull for the one that's the front runner because I'm more of a support the underdog kind of guy. But he's an exception for sure. We're all pulling for him for obvious reasons. Making a stand when no one else is willing to do it. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining our growing audience, although viewership tends to dip a little bit in the hot months of July and August. People are traveling, I suppose. But look, we've got sports clips now to attract more viewers to the Trumpet Daily. In any event, we appreciate you joining us. The video stream of this program, of course, is available at our website, thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live. Takes you to the live stream page. And also, we post all of the programs after the fact. If you need to catch up on your TD viewing, to get your TD fix, tonight in Tulsa, Celtic Throne's going to be performing tonight and tomorrow night. I got some insider information, by the way, from David Vigil, who helps as the tour manager. The promo code, if you want to get discounted tickets, I think it brings it down to $22 or $23. The promo code is member. Well, first go to the website, CelticThrone.com, and then from there go through the tabs that take you to the Tulsa Performing Arts Center, I believe it is. It's a very small theater. I think there's about 100 seats left for tonight and tomorrow. But if you want to get a discounted ticket, the promo code is MEMBER. Very easy to remember. MEMBER, M-E-M-B-E-R. These are the instructions. You have to first enter the coupon code at the top of the screen to make the discount price available. This has to be done before you select your seat location. So try to plug in the promo code first when you go through to the website for these Tulsa shows. What a bargain. Sunday's performance, by the way, right here in Armstrong Auditorium on our Edmond campus. Sunday's performance completely sold out. We have people waiting in line to get in on Sunday, so much so that I gave up my seat. I mean, I have seen it quite often, but I gave up my seat. That's being sold now to the general public. So if you want your, this is your last opportunity to see the show. If you're anywhere near Tulsa, if you're 3 or 4 hours away, a $22 ticket, it probably costs you $150 in gas. But still, you can blame that on Joe Biden. So it's the best of both worlds. You get a cheap ticket to see Celtic Throne tonight or tomorrow night. Let's fill up that small theater. And I'll also be going to these performances in Tulsa as well. So I hope to see you there. This was a tweet yesterday by author Dan Goldberg. He's one of the blue checks on Twitter. He says here, a note on COVID, July 6, 2021. So a year ago today, when vaccines were less prevalent, the U.S. was averaging about 14,000 new infections per day. 1 year later, so this year, right now, 1 year later, we're at 114,000 per day. Infections have just skyrocketed. It says here, 1 year ago, we're averaging 260 COVID deaths per day. Now we're closing in on 400. But you're supposed to just go along. You're supposed to get the jab. If you take a stand and say, no, I don't want it. At the very least, it doesn't work. But worse than that, there's lots of deadly, dangerous side effects. And commentators just can't understand it. Why? Why? How could you not get the jab? Well, look at the stats from this year compared to last year. Last year here in the U.S., about 14,000 infections per day. This year, 114,000. And now, I mean, the vaccines are everywhere. You can get a vaccine at any drugstore. Just drive down the street. Of course you get it. You just go along with the herd. I saw this video yesterday, by the way. These nine people on an elevator, they were all part of the gig. And they were facing the back of the elevator, not the door to the elevator. They were facing the back, and there was one person who was not in on it. She walks into the elevator, and like a normal person, she's facing the doors. But everyone around her is facing the back of the elevator. And so it goes up four floors, and by the time it's at the fourth floor, she had just slowly turned around through four stops on this elevator to join the herd, to follow the crowd. What is it? Exodus 23 and verse 2? Where God condemns there those who follow a multitude to do evil. They just follow along. We're supposed to just do what everyone else is doing. Well, look at what that's doing to this world. Touched on that yesterday. We're living in a sick world. It's sickening. That's the way the Bible describes it. Sickness from head to toe. Isaiah 1 and verse 4. There's a sickness that's set in, a disease that's spreading. And yet we're supposed to just do what any old expert tells us to do. There's a story at the Wall Street Journal this week. By many measures, red states, those that lean Republican, have recovered faster economically than Democratic-leaning blue ones, with workers and employees moving from the coast to the middle of the country and Florida. See, they're just trying to get back to their lives. Because for 2 years, they've been told, shut it down, put on the mask, get the jab, another jab, then get a booster. Now we're on to the fourth one, you know, another booster. What was that headline yesterday? I gave it to you. Yahoo News. The worst version of COVID is spreading. The worst version is now spreading. We're getting infections by, doesn't it show you what a racket this is? Can't the rest of the headline, can we update our vaccines in time? We've got to get a new vaccine. Oh, Pfizer and Moderna, they love this. They love that commentator. Why? Why, Novak? They love that sort of thing. Let's get more jabs. Let's get more, even in babies. Let's get the jabs in the babies. And then you read the first line of the article. I gave this to you yesterday. It bears repeating here. For the last 18 months, the original COVID-19 vaccines, first as a two-dose series, then as boosters, have done an extraordinary job shielding us from illness, hospitalization, and death. So why are the numbers increasing? Why are there more infections this year, right now, compared to just 12 months ago? Why? Why are more people dying? If the vaccine has done, as they put it, an extraordinary job, has it? You would think there'd be more people taking a stand, like the Joker. Let's pull for him. Why not support him all the way to the Wimbledon title? He's missed all of these tournaments. He's playing at the peak level of his career. They won't let him into Australia. Nadal, one of his competitors, says, well, that's the rule. He's breaking the rules. He knew the rules coming in, so why should he be disappointed that he can't come to Australia? Yesterday in our SEP orientation, we're gearing up for another summer educational program. And of course, there's lots of sporting activities at our camps. There's lots that you can learn from sports. Obviously, we're not here encouraging people to make a god out of it, or even a career for that matter. But we certainly do teach balance. And it is important to be balanced. Yesterday, I talked about raising the bar and how that every year we want to come in and just make camp a little bit better. Just keep working at improving it. I gave a series of Bible studies on this program a few weeks back about the importance of growth. What the Apostle Peter said there in 2 Peter 3. Grow in the grace and in the knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Grow in godly character. Keep working to improve. And speaking of raising the bar, by the way, you guys can show this footage off to the side if you like, but there was this remarkable record-setting feat. Over the weekend, they captured it in slow motion, someone. This 17-year-old, I forget his name, is it on my notes? Mondo Duplantis. 17 years of age, he sets a new record on the pole vault. It's a picture of perfection. Look at how he curls his long body right around this bar. I wish I would have gotten how high that is, but it's a new world record, and he's probably going to set more records. The kid's only 17 years old. He's literally raising the bar. And as I was telling the staff yesterday at our SEP orientation, that's the way we want to be spiritually. We've got to go into each camp looking to raise the bar, so to speak. Growth, as I said in those Bible studies a while back, growth is paramount. And you can see examples in the sports world with Djokovic or with this young man of individuals striving for perfection. Of individuals that are working to grow and to expand their game, their understanding, their knowledge of their particular profession or their skill. The Celtic Throne crew, by the way, I think it was before the Huntsville show, they all got together and watched the latest version of Riverdance. And I mean, if you look at a Riverdance performance today and compare it to when it first became popular in the 1990s with Michael Flatley and so on, I mean, the skill level of the dancers, you can almost, if you're in the world of step dancing or Irish dancing, and you look back at some of those 90s videos, it's almost laughable. The skill was just not anywhere near where it is today. Well, the crew watched that Riverdance performance, and initially it was a little bit discouraging as they thought, wow, those are all professional dancers, every single one of them. The one in the middle, the lead dancer, all the way through to the ones on the edges. and the beauty and the skill on display. It's a wonderful thing to behold. But as it happens, after the initial discouragement, I think that evening it was one of their best performances, or the next evening in Huntsville, because it was inspiring to just see the level of perfection on display. And God wants us to be motivated to pursue excellence. And you know what gives us that motivation? It's when we're growing. If anywhere along the way, you know, you plateau, again, just to use the sports analogy, and you feel like, well, that's all that I need to do to expand or to grow my game, then you're going to get worse. Now, we all have to fight against the test of time. We all get older and slower. None of these athletes are able to continue on into their 50s or 60s. But boy, when they're in their prime and they're working to grow and to improve, there's quite a few lessons that we can take away from that. I mentioned to the staff yesterday, I'll mention it to you right here, the two sections in the New Throne of David book. There's one on page 36, just a short little section. God expects more. You should go and read that. It's really inspiring. It's a challenge to you and to me. God expects more. And then on page 115, you've got another small section. Raise the standard. Raise the standard. Raise the bar. Both of those sections are in my father's book, The New Throne of David. If you don't have a copy of that, by the way, call our operators today. The toll-free number here in the U.S. and Canada, 1-866-930-3024. Herbert Armstrong. Herbert Armstrong, right toward the end of his ministry, back in 1985, he says this. This is in response to or following the reference to 2 Peter 3:18. He says, we have to grow in knowledge. We have to learn God's program. We've got to learn God's program. There's a program that God has in place. I was telling the staff yesterday, look, there's a lot of things going on this summer. Everybody's busy. We're all wearing different hats, multiple hats in some cases. It can feel like coming into SCP that we're not, you know, that we haven't been able to put enough time into the preparation. But I assured them that God and Jesus Christ are thoroughly prepared. They are ready for this event. They're ready for the summer educational program. God has a program, and he wants for us to learn it. He wants for us to really just bring him right to the center and let him take charge. But then we've got to be motivated and driven to keep up with the pace that he sets. He's constantly raising the bar. He's constantly setting new world records. Notice 1 Corinthians 1. And verse 26, it says, for you see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. God, the high and mighty of this world, that there's not too many of them coming along listening to the trumpet daily or requesting a visit with one of God's ministers or coming along as a member in God's church. Why? Why aren't there that many wise men after the flesh or mighty and noble ones coming into the church? Well, because they're not teachable, because they have too much vanity. Well, a little vanity is too much. They're self-reliant. They're self-willed. They don't want to bring God into the center of their lives. They want to mock God. They want to make fun of God. They're obsessed about things like abortion or transgender rights. And I mean, if they don't get their way on that, they might burn a city down, some of these cult members. But to bring God into their lives, to bring God into their marriages, to bring God into their families, to bring God into their child rearing, no way. Can't do that. And so God calls the lowly. He calls the ones that know. That no, they are nothing. They are worthless. Mr. Armstrong talked about his life before conversion, a burned out hunk of junk. He came to that realization. Now, he started out with some cocky drive to be a success. And he did point out how important, as I said last week, it was just to have some ambition, even though it was misguided at the start. When God humbled him, then he really became ambitious for God and for God's purposes. Verse 27, it says, "But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty." See, in the end, people are going to look around when they finally know. You know, Ezekiel 33, right at the end of that chapter, it says, when all of these things come to pass, then they're going to know there was a prophet among them. Then they're going to be, somehow or another, God, I'm sure, will remind them of that prophet's work, of this campus, of everything that was coming out from, and how that the message was going out. They had an opportunity to repent before the tribulation. They had an opportunity to get their lives on track, spiritually speaking. There was an opportunity there for growth. But they rejected it. Sadly, they rejected it. It says here that no flesh, this is verse 29, that no flesh should glory in his presence. See, that's the thing. God calls the lowly. Now, he doesn't call us to stay there. He calls us, we start in a low position, but we have to constantly raise the bar, you see. And so many scriptures bring this out, this lesson. And as I say, you see lots of excellent lessons just in the world of sports. Now, it's easy to get out of balance when it comes to cheering on your team and so on. And we're not for that. But as I can remember when I was a kid, my father giving me an article, you know, about how Larry Bird perfected his three-point shot. And my father was a minister then. And he knew I enjoyed basketball. So he talked to me about the game and even taught me a lot about the game. And always, always, always drove home the spiritual lessons, as he would also hand me the Ambassador College Bible Correspondence course. Now go through this and strive for perfection as well, just like you're doing with your basketball team. Verse 31, it says that according as it is written, "He that glories, let him glory in the eternal." See, when we start out at that lowly level, and then start improving and growing and perfecting that godly character in us. Not that we do it. It's God in us always. It's ultimately, it's submitting to God's will. Not following our own. Jesus, the night before he was crucified, he was basically praying to God, I don't want to go through this. Nevertheless, not my will, but your will be done. There was Jesus Christ, perfect in character, never sinned once, just crying out to God for help, for power, for strength. And he kept growing, made the ultimate sacrifice right there at the end of his physical life. Listen to this quote from page 115. This is in the New Throne of David book. "We are here to build the spiritual temple by learning to be God-centered, always trying to think like David, to think like God, and to have a heart like God in every detail." It says that must be our spiritual standard. It says here, "And now that we have the throne of David, God is telling us we need to raise the bar. We need to raise the bar. We need to set a new record." I was telling the staff yesterday that really so many of the most significant changes and improvements that we've made to our youth program, it's happened since that book was produced, or since we received that knowledge contained in that book, 2017. I think the book then came out in 2018. We've raised the bar. We have to. I mean, look at who we are. We're representing Jesus Christ. We're transitioning to the rule, the reign of Jesus Christ on the throne of David in Jerusalem. My father says God's telling us that we need to raise the bar. Having the throne of David requires a high standard. He says we have to be different. We cannot be weak like we are now and sit on David's throne. We have to be different. We have to think like the kings and priests. And sometimes, you know, when you know God's called me as one of the lowly ones, I was a nobody before coming into the church. Well, but he sees our hearts. And even if we're off to a lowly starter, we have a mustard seed beginning, and all of us do. God, if God brought you into this, if God brought you along, he sees in your heart, he sees the heart of a king. He doesn't look at human beings the way that human beings do. 1 Samuel 16:7 brings that out. David was just a nobody out in the field tending to the sheep. His brothers and his father, they didn't even think he'd be in the running to be anointed as king. You know the story. The prophet Samuel, he went through all the brothers, and then he turned to Jesse and said, is this it? Are there any more sons? Well, yeah, but I mean, he's the teenager in the field. The teenager in the field. Go get him. And God saw in that teenager, he saw the heart of a king. That's inspiring. David had a lowly beginning. And over the course of, well, he was tried and tested for what, 17 years before he was finally king? Saul was trying to kill him. And that little nobody became a powerful king, a ruler for God. He grew and grew and grew. You want to get into David's talents and abilities. I mean, this is why we promote this so much, particularly for our young people, our children. Look, come along, and you might could be part of Celtic Throne, even if you don't have much experience in music or dance. If you're just willing to work hard and improve and raise the bar, come along. Come to our youth programs. Get involved in these skill sessions, and just concentrate on improvement. Concentrate on growth. There's some lessons there that we can really drill into these young people, in the hope, too, that it really drills in deeply, spiritually, that they're growing spiritually. In the New Throne of David book, it says, we must keep raising the standard. Jesus Christ himself is the one raising the standard. If we're going to share this throne with Jesus Christ, we need Christ's mind. We need Christ's mind. It says we need a laser-like focus on building God's character, and we will be judged on how well we do this. We're going to be judged in the end for how well we stand for God. Stand on principle, the principles outlined in Scripture. And then strive for perfection. Strive to perfect that obedience. That's what, in the end, we're going to be judged by. When we come back, we'll get into some of the news of the day. We, in case you didn't notice, we kind of flip-flopped it on you. Starting with the sports clip. It's ratings month. No, I don't know. It is though, a valuable, valuable lesson. Sam wants me to play this. Play the clip next to me of our newest member of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Yesterday, a summer league basketball game. Obviously. Quite a move here. I think he's 7'3". He's pretty thin. Some would say he's too thin for the NBA. I think he's going to do pretty good for himself. We'll see how it happens. Chet Holmgren, I think, is his name. That's some Thunder basketball. The first and most likely the last time that you'll ever get to see a Thunder basketball clip on this program. When we come back, we'll get to the more serious clips of the day and round off the program with some of the more significant news stories coming in the last 24 hours. As well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury. This is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some email feedback, send us a note at td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
You are listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Is there a more urgent expression in the Bible than the last hour? When he wrote his epistles, the Apostle John thought it was the last hour before Christ's second coming. In fact, it was only a type of our time today. Every detail of what John prophesied is now being fulfilled. Request the last hour. Never before has proper time management been more important, and this book will give you the urgency you need to organize your life God's way. Request the last hour. As part of this free offer, request The 7 Laws of Success by Herbert W. Armstrong, one of his most popular books ever. Again, both books are completely free, so contact us now and get the help you need to organize your life God's way. The Trumpet Daily.
So it's looking like Boris Johnson's government is collapsing. I think there, Richard was saying there's something like 30 people from his administration who've already resigned. I forget the name of the scandal. Of course, he's had quite a few scandals during this two-year COVID scamdemic. In any event, Richard will be subbing in on tomorrow's program, so be assured that you'll get the very latest. He's already chomping at the bit to talk to you about the UK and the problem with Johnson's government. So that'll be on tomorrow's program, and of course you'll also get his expert views on affairs in not just Britain but all across Europe as well. So the commentary continues with respect to the Highland Park shooting on Monday, July 4th. This, just move ahead to clip 7.
Maybe aggressively pushing forward on changes to prevent more mass shootings going forward. Is there a role that we can play as a public?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think first and foremost is to be aware of this as an issue and vote accordingly.
Okay, that's Peter Strzok. So as I was saying to you yesterday, as soon as the shooting happened, I mean, the first thought I had, what does Andy McCabe think about this? And then my second thought, what about Peter Strzok? Peter Strzok, he cheated on his wife and he tried to overthrow the government of the United States. And he is now weighing in on what we need to do to get a handle on the gun control debate. This man, he's committed adultery and treason, and he gets a job, doesn't he, on MSNBC. You, as I said yesterday, you can't make this up. This man can smell Trump voters from his car. He can drive by Walmart and smell Trump voters. This man assured his lover that there was no way Donald Trump was going to become president because he was in the FBI. They were spying on Trump. Crossfire Hurricane. He led it. He led the investigation into Donald Trump. And they lied and lied and lied and said that you're not being investigated. No, it's just Russian interference into the election. Try for a moment to wrap your mind around that. The entire premise for spying on Trump and all things Trump was that there was election interference in 2016. Now, if you say there was election interference in 2020, you might go to jail. It was so bad in 2016 that they had to have an investigation go on for years. I mean, Bob Mueller came along and just continued it. James Comey was kind of like the link in the chain. He was the carryover from Obama. He was transitioning through. He lasted for 7-8 months into the Trump administration. And then his masterpiece of working for the FBI was to make sure that Bob Mueller could get his investigation going. And it continued all through the Trump years. Over what? Russian interference in the election. The fact that Trump-Russia collusion tipped the scales in Donald Trump's favor in 2016. So he's guilty of adultery, of treason, and he has this nice, well-paying job for MSNBC. And now we're supposed to turn to him for solutions to the problems America is facing. It's unbelievable. More news on this Robert Cremo. In 2019, he threatened to kill his family with a sword. Police came along and confiscated the weapons, took a bunch of, I think he had five knives confiscated, a sword as well. He was 22 the other day when he shot up the parade. So I guess going back to 2019, he's 18, 19 years of age. I mean, he's an adult threatening to kill his family. You would think if the police knew that here's a man with knives and a sword threatening to, he was also suicidal, but threatening to kill his family, you would think that that would somehow come up when he went and bought firearms. He had four or five of them. Yeah, all the red flag laws, nothing. That Illinois has some of the strictest gun laws in the United States of America. You're not going to learn that on MSNBC or on CNN. They won't tell you about how difficult it is to get fired. But for him, he somehow got it. Listen to this summary, basically, of what's been learned in the last 24 hours or so about this mass murderer. Clip 6.
This morning, new details emerging about the man charged with killing seven people at the 4th of July parade in Highland Park, Illinois. Authorities say back in April of 2019, someone who knew the suspect called police to report he had attempted suicide, and months later, police were called to his home after a relative said he was threatening to kill his family.
A family member reported that Cremo said he was going to kill everyone, and Cremo had a collection of knives.
He was not arrested that day, but according to police, they confiscated more than a dozen knives and a sword.
At that time, there was no probable cause to arrest. There were no complaints that were signed by any of the victims.
On Tuesday, authorities searching the home where the suspect lives with his uncle Paul say they found more legally bought guns. Despite the prior incidents revealed by police, Paul Cremo insists there were no signs his nephew would carry out such an attack.
There's no warning signs.
Overnight, ABC News learning the suspect cleared four background checks between June 2020 and September 2021 and was able to legally buy the murder weapon. Illinois has some of the strictest gun laws in the country, including so-called red flag laws, but they did not come into play because the family never filed what's known as an extreme risk protection order. The president of the advocacy group Every Town for Gun Safety saying, quote, the shooter exhibited some dangerous warning signs, exactly what Illinois' red flag law is designed to address. But tools are only useful when they're taken out of the toolbox.
So I guess they're blaming the family. He wasn't, because they didn't finally go through and say, he's a risk. I would think the police would have understood this when they confiscated his knives in 2019. So all of these strict gun laws, all of these so-called red flag laws, the laws are there. The laws are there. It's just they're not being administered. There's no will coming from government, from law enforcement, to keep criminals off the streets. Now, there's lots and lots of angles that you can cover to this story, and we get into a lot of them on this show. But if a politician gets up and says, universal background checks, that's what we need. He was checked. His background was checked. We need red flag laws. They had them in Illinois. They had them. We need family members to speak up. Well, they did in 2019. Never mind what the uncle said there. No red flags at all. What about when he tried to kill his family? Was that something that maybe could have tipped you off that he's a danger, a menace to society? I mentioned on yesterday's show how that you hear virtually nothing about Satan the devil when these tragedies happen. Nobody brings it up. There is one exception. And as it happens, he's typically a sports commentator. I guess that's the running theme for today's show. But he also makes regular appearances on Tucker's show I'm talking about Jason Whitlock. Listen to what he said about this shooter last night. Clip two.
There's a problem with American culture. We are looking at the ramifications of a cultural rot. And we really think we've outsmarted God's natural order, that the development of children we can put on the back burner. If there's a problem with your kid, Pfizer has a pill that will correct it.
Exactly.
If you're a woman, the most important right you have is the right to kill the baby growing in your womb. And so that's a message and an indication of a mindset that the development and the cultivation and the nurturing of children isn't a priority in America. And that's why these Robert Cremos are being created, because as a society, as a culture, we've put them on the back burner. We told them they don't matter. We're telling young boys, particularly if they're heterosexual and have Christian views, that they're the worst people on the planet. They're responsible for everything that has gone wrong on the planet. You're horrible. And then we've normalized the way they present themselves, an insanity, tattooing up their faces, rapping about killing and murdering people. We've normalized all of this insanity. And so we can't look at a Robert Cremo and go, hey, this looks abnormal because everybody's doing this. He's just mimicking what he's seeing the people we're celebrating do. Yeah. And so we can't even say, hey, this isn't a proper look for a young person. This isn't a proper way to present yourself. Why isn't it? Every rapper that I know that has been Super Bowl halftime or whatever, they have demonic, satanic, violent music, just like the stuff Robert Cremo was producing.
That's right. We normalize the insanity. That last statement, every rapper, they have demonic, satanic, violent music, just like Primo produced. And he put it on YouTube, and he put it on Spotify. So he was making money. He was worth $100,000 himself. But it's important to note that YouTube and Spotify were also making money as the platforms that provided him the opportunity to sing about violence, to be moved by satanic anger. Is Spotify and YouTube, are they going to be held to account? Are they going to donate their funds to a worthy cause? Funds that they take from... And Primo's not alone. I mean, you can find that sort of content all over the place. And so here he comes. He's not even just all tatted up. Listen to this police officer describing how he showed up to the parade. This one's, clip three.
During the attack, Primo was dressed in woman's clothing, and investigators do believe he did this to conceal his facial tattoos and his identity and help him during the escape with the other people who were fleeing the chaos.
He dressed as a woman in order to look normal, in order to cover some of his tattoos. I mean, in other words, to have tattoos and to cross-dress, that is to be accepted. We had a full month where the rainbow flags were waving all across the nation. As I say, he's like a poster child for the LGBTQ+++ movement. So he shows up to the parade, he's dressed like a woman, and then he starts shooting people, just like he had fantasized, just like he had played out on video games, just like he told you, he told his parents he was going to do. I've dreamed about this. This has been my dream. And then all of that, conveniently enough for the social media platforms, it's just erased the night of the massacre. Then they finally censor Primo's accounts. When they go back and look at him and say, wait a second, he actually told us he was going to do this. He actually told us this was his dream. Normalizing insanity. Whitlock said here, what about the development and the cultivation and the nurturing of children? It used to be a priority in American homes. Now, not so much. Parents are gone. Uncle says, I didn't see any signs. Did the uncle spend any time with him at all in that house? I didn't see any signs. The same story, just like so many of the others we've covered on this show. It's just a new chapter. All the warning signs were there. They were there for years. Only a few commentators, though, will go right to the source, spiritually. Satan the devil and his demon army, cast to this earth and now confined to this earth. And you see their fingerprints on everything. This is from, it's a blog, speaking of the devil. I thought I could hear the devil laughing, this commentator writes. Again, he's in the minority. Not too many people will bring this up. Are there any serious doubts that as a culture we've turned our faces from God? We infantilize our young people. We demand the right to kill innocent unborn. We raise our young in a culture of death. There are elementary school teachers who are regularly depicted on social media as being excited about exploring sexual themes and gender identity with young children. Ours is a culture that fills kids with pharmaceutical drugs to manage their mood swings. There was a video clip of a father, I think from Washington State, saying that, yeah, they gave my kid drugs because he had problems with attention. And they didn't even ask me. And there's another clip going around of these little children who are proud. They're proud transgenders. And then we come together and we're supposed to ask, why is this happening? There were no signs. There were no signs. Well, the fact that he left the house that day, all tatted up and in a woman's dress, that alone is a neon sign. And there were a lot of them over the last 3-4 years. Ours is a culture that fills kids with pharmaceutical drugs to manage their mood swings, a culture that offers them video games to live out their most violent, murderous fantasies. It says, we push our political anxieties and pathologies down the throats of our children, telling young men, for example, that masculinity is toxic. And if they happen to be white and male, they're led to believe that they're the cause of almost everything that's wrong in the world. The weak ones break. The strong grow sullen and angry. We subject the young to relentless psychological pressure to satisfy the emptiness of our politics. We don't think of the culture we raise them in. We are our own gods now. That's right. Judges 21:25. Every man just doing what seems right in their own eyes. And in ancient Israel, God warned against that. In the period of the judges, they were all in. I think it's Deuteronomy 11, where God says, don't do what seems right. Keep God in the center. Keep God in the middle of the camp, and then just try to keep pace with him as he continually raises the bar, as he continually raises that righteous standard of conduct. It says, and yet we're surprised at the monsters that we've created. He's got it right. As a society, we've created these monsters. How shameful that so many of the most prominent voices in the world today immediately rush to a microphone to blame the gun. And then you have these psychopaths, these deranged, demon-possessed lunatics that gave off all kinds of warning signs for years. In most cases, this is America Under Attack. It says, yet what is the solution, according to the radical left, politicians, and the media? What's the solution to all of these mass shootings? Ban the guns. And then my father talks about all of the executive actions that Barack Obama took to try to make it more difficult. Look, it's more difficult to get a gun in the United States than it was a generation or two ago. For sure it is, particularly in places like Illinois and New York. Highland Park, by the way. You talk about a gun-free zone. That's where these killers go every time. Because they know there's not going to be any resistance. Nobody's going to shoot back. So they find the gun-free zone, whether it's a university or whatever. Highland Park, on and on it goes. And then the mayors of these good cities, I say good in quotes, Philadelphia and Chicago, and then they rush to lecture us about the Constitution or the Second Amendment. It's unbelievable. My father writes this. Says, mass shootings are sickening, but what makes me sicker is somebody using such massacres to promote a tyrannical political ideology. That's even more sickening. You know, it's. I would add to that, how sickening is it to put up a man who's committed adultery and treason as a voice to speak at a time of tragedy? That's right, Peter Strzok, Andy McCabe, put them out there. Let's look to them. I mean, that's Judges 21 and verse 25. Every man, and the things that go unpunished. Blame the gun, blame the gun. What about the shooter? What about the family? What about these politicians who won't protect the citizens of their city? In Chicago, I told you this yesterday, in Chicago over the weekend, there were more murders, seven to be precise, than there were regarding the parade. I think six people were murdered there. It may go up. It might have already. I didn't check this morning. But what about those killers? What about their mentality? Listen to Joy Reid's analysis, by the way. This is on MSNBC. And she's talking about these kinds of shooters. Clip one.
I think the thing is, one of the things the founding fathers did not anticipate is sort of where a good chunk of a certain demographic of Americans are mentally and emotionally right now. But there is like a cultural attraction to that among a certain demographic of young men. If you look at the demographics of these mass shooters, they kind of track. These are young men between 18 and 22. They're largely young white men. They're sort of loser types that you could sort of stereotype them as. And they have a fixation on violence, on other people's violence, of watching other people commit violence and then repeating and reenacting that kind of violence. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think we're missing that. This guy had like Trump affinities.
Oh, right, right. He was a Trump supporter, they say. He was white. He was 18 to 22. I mean, he had this affinity for violence. What about the ones who murdered the other people in Chicago, the ones not in the parade? What about the every weekend that this happens to six, seven, eight people in Chicago? What about those killers, many of them black, by the way? Do they have an affinity for violence? A lot of them are mass shootings, too. One murdered, another couple are shot in the drive-by. It's gang warfare going on night after night after night. Do these murderers, can she break that down for us? What's going on in the hearts? Do they have an affinity for Joe Biden? No, it's just all, it's like my father said in America Under Attack. It's sickening, these mass shootings. But what's more sick? People like this who will exploit the tragedy for their political ideologies. Coming back to this article about the devil is laughing. It says here, there is a spiritual void. We know this. We know the cost of what we're doing to ourselves, don't we? Can't we see the cost of what we're doing to ourselves? We've brought this on ourselves. We're shaking our fist at God. We have kicked God out of the camp, and we've invited the devil in. And the devil, as I said, he's got his fingerprints on so many of these stories that we cover on the Trumpet Daily. That's all that we have time for, unfortunately, on today's show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to email us, td@thetrumpet.com. Thanks for joining us on today's show, and Richard will see you tomorrow.